This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org.
Hi, this is Marina Sirtis, Deanna Troi from Star Trek The Next Generation. You're listening to Trek FM.
T.O. Greyhawk.
Welcome to another cup of Earl Grey, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to the next generation. I'm your host, Justin Ozer, and join with me today are Amy Nelson and Richard Marquez. Amy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I love talking next gen with you guys. And again, I know we say this every week, but it's just so much fun. I just love next gen. So happy to be here.
Excellent. Well, and right before recording, before I introduce Richard, we had a little transporter accident and we had a short-lived duplicate of Thomas Marquez. But Richard, now that you've gotten rid of him, how are you doing today?
I feel whole. Oh, doing fantastic. I'm also excited to talk about what we're going to be talking about today. Yeah. And I've got something for you, Amy, on this one, too. So when we get in there, we'll talk about it.
All right. In case listeners are confused, we are not talking about second chances and transporter duplicates.
Yeah.
We actually had something happen in Zoom where Richard's image got duplicated. So that's
why. It was just like the transporter failure, and there was two Richards. It was crazy.
But it was a Richard of like 10 seconds ago. So
yeah, it was delayed. Oh, it was so weird. Anyway,
like Times Squared or something. Ooh, so many references.
This day when we're recording, I end up post something in the Babel conference about that, and maybe I'll do it in the thread when this one comes out. But anyway, Now that we're back to normal, hopefully, we have some Babel conference feedback from Earl Grey 246, which was a Jennifer Edwards interview. And Amy, do you want to start that off?
Yes. Greg Malumbi says, nice interview. She mentioned her husband or relative was a recurring character on Babylon 5. Just curious, who was that character? Jennifer Edwards responded, my ex-husband, father of my daughter, Hannah, Mark Schneider. And Mark Schneider played Wade in 4 episodes of Babylon 5.
Yeah. Great to know. You asked a question and we got it answered. She answered very quickly.
Yeah. She has so many connections. It was great to hear that.
Yeah, Star Trek and Babylon 5 and all kinds of sci-fi.
Yeah, I think it was a shock to all of us that she was. I can see the character's name, but not the name of the actual person. But Tasha Yar, you know, our reactions
were. Her brother was married to Denise Crosby.
Yeah. So. Well, and she's personal friends with Brent Spiner. And it's like every time she said something, the next thing was like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Oh, and your husband was William Shatner's karate teacher.
I know, right?
I still want to know how he knows. I don't know. I mean, that karate chop and everything, I don't know. We'll see. The Kirk Kung Fu.
Yeah.
So Wes Huntington said, thanks for this awesome interview and thanks for asking my question. It is such a small world that she had family connections to Star Trek thanks to her brother being married to Denise Crosby. There you go. There's the name. Yep. Once again, awesome interview. And remember, Alexander insists that Klingons don't listen to teachers. I disagree.
Yeah. I think the Klingon honor and respect would enforce that children listen to their teachers.
I would agree.
I'm curious about a question though, because if on their ships, someone who's a subordinate can kill a higher ranking officer if they're not doing their job. Is there something in Klingon society where you can kill your teacher if you feel like they're, oh no, I don't want to go there.
No, let's not go there.
Yeah.
We don't need to give my students any ideas.
Klingons, your students are not Klingons.
Okay,
so
okay.
They have no excuse.
I'd be worried if you let them bring in Batlist into your classroom.
Oh,
jeez.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay, we've gone way too dark. Anyway, moving right along. Glad our listeners enjoyed that interview with Jennifer Edwards. We also received an email. So that came from Rob Vaughn, who says he's in Boston Link / Portsmouth, UK. And he says, hi all, just wanted to send you all a thank you message, as with the help of you and the other Trek FM shows, Warp 5, Standard Orbit, The Edge, you have helped me rediscover my love for Trek. I've been a fan for as long as I can remember, but I kind of drifted away as I got older. With the return of Star Trek to cinema screens, theaters, and Discovery on television, my interest was back, but it was the discovery of all of the great shows on Trek FM which has made me love Trek again, so thank you all. Well, thank you, Rob. We're just always so honored when listeners tell us that these shows are meaningful to them and that they're taking the time to listen to them. It helps them rediscover their love of Star Trek or makes an impact on them. So thank you. Glad you're enjoying Earl Grey. We also forwarded your email to the hosts of the other shows that you named, and they appreciate that as well. So yeah, thanks so much for the feedback.
Yeah, I can completely relate with you, Rob, because when I found Trek FM, that's when, I was loving listening and reigniting my fandom for Star Trek just to a whole deeper level. It's a great experience and grateful for Trek FM.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's a time old story that a lot of us say, you know, when we wear our Star Trek gear and everything, and someone just comes up and asks questions about Star Trek, and it's amazing that when their eyes start lighting up like it's Christmas and to rekindle that Star Trek fandom again. So, yeah, thank you very much for sending that email. It's good to hear that we're at least making a really good positive impact on your fandom.
Yeah, definitely. And Trek FM, something I discovered, I guess it was about 3.5 years ago, and I had already had like this building Trek fandom that was happening, but I think it's because of Trek FM and all the shows and getting involved as a host and all of that, that I've gone to Star Trek Las Vegas, connected with so many people, so it just really deepened it. So I can definitely relate to what you're saying, Rob. So thanks again. Well, today on Earl Grey, we are continuing our favorite character moments. This time we're going into the movies. So today we're talking about Generations. And I don't know about you guys, but it felt like a different experience looking for moments, because just over the course of a couple hour movie instead of, you know, 26 episodes. So, I'll be curious, you know, as you make your picks, or if you wanted to start out by talking about what the process was like, because I'm sure it might have been different. So, Amy, do you want to maybe talk about that a little bit and give your first pick?
Yeah, this was very different experience, like you said, because this is just 2 hours instead of 26 hours, you know, to choose from. And I, when I rewatched Generations, I found a newfound love for it. Every single moment I was watching it, I'm like, man, this is such a good movie. And I've sort of, I don't know, maligned it a little bit, because it's, you know, it's not First Contact, and in my book, it's not Nemesis, you know. But I was watching it and going, man, this is a really good story. You know, we've seen these characters and now they're in a major film, and how they've progressed, and especially doing these character moments, like to see them where they are at in this movie scene. I just think it's really Generations. It's bumped up in the overall scheme of things in my book. So I was really glad to watch it. And again, sort of with a fresh perspective, but yet still with hindsight, because this was the first movie that I saw in the theater with my entire family. I had my dad and my two brothers, and, you know, we just had the whole family go together. And so there's that nostalgia part of this movie that goes with it as well for me.
That's great to hear. Yeah. So given that, what would you say is your first pick?
Well, my first pick is going to be with Troy. I don't think that's a surprise.
Surprise.
But, you know, through the seven seasons, and so many people question Troy's role on the ship as a counselor, I think it is very evident and sort of goes to support why I believe that she is, her main concern and duty is for the captain. And when the captain learns that his family, Robert, and his nephew, Rene, were killed in that fire, he is emotionally distraught. And of course, Troy can sense this. And I think she does such a good job in giving him the space, checking in a little bit. But then when Picard is ready, he calls her into the ready room and they have this discussion. And Troy just listens to him and he's trying to, you know, put words to his emotions over this distraught news that he has received. And I think she succinctly sort of sums up really what Picard is having trouble with when she says, "You're concerned that there's no more family line." And he's like, "Yes, that's it." Like she was able to, you know, put the words that Picard was missing. And I think help him to deal and to process this very emotional state that he was in. And I just think that for her character shows the support and the respect that they both have for each other. You know, Picard relying on her and her, you know, just being there when he needs her.
You know, and that's a great point. And it also shows that how well they know each other. I mean, the sheer history of what he's been through, and she's like you said, you know, she's always been there in his most vulnerable times throughout the whole entire seven seasons, and it's, you know, like you said, Amy, you know, she gave him his space, or she gave him space and everything to basically, you know, go through it in his head and basically make sense of it and whatnot, and then when he's ready, you know, and then you can, and he'll talk about it. And that's a great point. And yeah, so
yeah, it called back to, if you remember, at the end of his Borg experience when he was Locutus, like the last shot is Picard talking to Troy, you know, and just sort of going through that Borg moment. And it just sort of is a great callback to that, you know, you're right. They do respect each other and he does rely on her and her counsel.
Yeah. And I think I got a newfound appreciation of that because I was watching Generations actually a few weeks back when we were going to talk about Picard's family, and what she's doing there for him is so important, and he's really gotten to the point where he really trusts her counsel a lot. Because there are some moments early on where it's like, "I'm fine, nothing's wrong," all that. But it also reminded me of something I rewatched recently, which is Chain of Command. And at the very end of that, it's Troy helping to counsel Picard, who has to deal with the fact that he actually believed there were five lights at the end of it. And the episode ends with that as well. So I think it does reinforce that she is the one who is there for him in his most difficult moments when he wants to really just privately talk to someone and deal with a really heavy moment. So yeah, I think it's a great choice. So Richard, your first choice, and maybe a little bit about how this was different having to pull from a movie instead of a season.
Okay, so before I start, first off, Amy, I just want to let you know, I never saw Troy wear a DS9 version of the uniform. I don't know if you noticed that. Yeah. I never noticed it until I watched it again today.
Oh. So,
and of course, Picard too. Well, no. Picard was on Meridian 3 with the DS9. So yeah, she's the only one.
Huh, yeah. Interesting.
The only one who doesn't like switch from time to time.
Right, yeah. From the TNG to the DS9 Voyager uniform. Well, not really DS9. Well, anyway, you know what I mean. Boys uniform.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
But like, I was like, whoa, are you serious? So, because I was trying to look for differences in the uniforms, because, you know, obviously this is where we do the transition. And right. It's just, yeah. So anyway, I noticed that. So anyway, and also number two, I just recently bought a 65-inch plasma TV. freaking Generations looked amazing on that screen. Oh my gosh. I was like, you could see every single detail. Thank you, whoever freaking did the makeup and did all the plastic stuff and cosmetics and all that kind of stuff, because it looked amazing and you could see every single detail. So whoever did that, congrats to you, because that was just a freaking amazing to see it on Blu-ray, or, well, yeah, on high resolution or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But like,
so yeah, the movie still holds up.
The movie holds up when it comes to the special effects and makeup and art and all that kind of stuff. That's for sure. Okay, and the story too. But it looked amazing. I was impressed. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I haven't seen Generations probably in at least 2 years or something like that, and this is the first time I've seen it since then on this screen, and it was amazing. Nice. Everyone should rewatch it.
Well, favorite character moment is the TV he watched it on.
Richard recommends getting a new plasma
TV. When you get a new TV, and do it in February. But like, yeah, it was amazing. I was blown away by how great it looked. So anyway.
Okay. Can I just real quick insert? I had a friend, same scenario. They were getting a new TV and a surround sound in their house. And they had this like playoff system where they were debating which movie to watch the very first time once it was installed. And I of course was like, you need to watch a Star Trek movie. And it didn't win in their little playoff system. But when they did watch the Star Trek movie, I got a text from him. It's like, we should have watched Star Trek the first time. It was amazing. I'm like, which I told you so. So
yeah, which one did they watch?
It was 09, but still the same idea. It's like, see
from
it.
From what I just heard you say, don't argue with Miss Nelson.
The moral of the story, yes.
Yeah, and Star Trek should always win a competition like
that. There you go. That's what I heard.
Anyway, your first choice, Richard.
All right, so I mean, so we're going back to Picard, and it's that moment where he's talking with Dr. Soran in 10 forward. Absolutely. He doesn't need to say anything when he starts talking about time. And then, of course, like Amy said about Rene and Robert, that, time is the fire that we burn. And he's right. I mean, and obviously you saw it on his face, the dread on his face, that he's absolutely right, that time is precious, and so is the time that we spend with our families as well. Or at least that's how I saw it. And I absolutely think that was a great character moment. Sad, yes, but I think it was a very pivotal moment for Picard. Like I said, his book was everything. So.
Yeah, that is great. That was actually one of my honorable mentions. Because we see, you're right, that look that Picard has, and the words, the fire in which we burn, calling back to how he lost Robert and Rene, like that sticks with Picard.
Oh, I never thought of that as like, Robert and Rene. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you can just see that devastation, and it's like, yes, I have lost this. And then at the end of the movie, when Picard, goes through all of this and he's talking to Riker and he's like, I've now come to believe that time is a companion that joins us on our journey. So taking sort of that negative and turning it into a positive, I think, is just so important for Picard's character there. That's a great pick, Richard.
Yes, excellent pick. And as you were talking through that, Amy, I think you took one of mine.
Dear.
I'll replace it with something. But no, that's really great. And like one of the things I was watching for this time that I just didn't think much about before is how you see Soran before, like it's revealed that he's on this big quest to be part of the Nexus. And he seems like just somebody who's really determined for something, but you don't know what. So it's not like he's like a villain at that point, but he just, yeah, he has this fire burning within him for something. And I mean, yeah, it's great. Great pick. I just got distracted a little because of what Amy said that took one of mine, but that's okay. That wasn't the first one I was going to talk about. So for my first pick, so in this process, you know, one of the things that I thought was great is that we can not only pick, it is a next generation movie, but it's a crossover and we can pick things with original series timeline or characters. So, and it, like, I'm always, I think, really impressed by the first part of it with the Enterprise B, and it's in the 23rd century and they're going to, you know, launch this ship, and Kirk and Scotty and Chekhov are there. I actually love that part, although how Harriman is just so kind of incompetent when there's a crisis kind of boggles my mind.
Tuesdays and is his favorite.
Yeah.
Movie.
Yes.
Don't tell me. Tuesday. Yeah, I know. It's like, oh, you don't have any medical staff or tractor beams or torpedoes. I mean, yeah, it's supposed to be like a regular cruise, but like, who knows what's going to happen, right? Anyway, besides that, one of the things that I chose, well, it's kind of a dual character moment. And it's part of that whole scene because, you know, they have this thing that happens. There's this distress call. They see the Nexus. The ship's kind of, the Enterprise B is kind of being torn apart a little bit. What impressed me is that they're totally on it. They're doing a really great job. And I think Damora especially is just like calm and cool and doing like what's needed until Kirk can step in. So that's one of the things that I like, that, I mean, not only that you're seeing like Kirk and Scotty and Chekhov, but there are these other crew members, even though they have bit parts. And I like that you see them being really competent under fire and doing a great job to help contribute to what's needed. And then the second part of it actually has to do with Kirk, because at first, you know, Harriman is going to go and do whatever needs to be done to save things. And Kirk's like, you know what? No, I'm going to take care of that. And he is, like, in a really symbolic way, kind of risking his own life so that another generation, you might even say the next generation, can continue. And that's really just part of this crew, right, of the Enterprise B. But there's something that I really like about this first part where you're seeing everyone in this really difficult situation, and most of them are doing an amazing job, even if they haven't, you know, been in Starfleet for decades and decades. And the person who has been there for that long is going to risk his life in order to save them. I don't know. There's just something about that part that always makes a big impression on me, despite that really it is a next generation movie. I don't know what you guys think about that.
Well, and really, I mean, you know, Kirk doing that, I mean, that was the right thing for him to do anyway. I mean, yeah, like you said, mm-hmm. You know, Harriman, I mean, despite his incompetence, as we all saw, and I hope that dude had a good career. Let's just say that. Let's just put that on record. But like, it's just, you know, he did the right thing. I mean, it's not his ship. Technically, it's supposed to be the captain. And he's not the captain. So, well, not the captain. Well, you know what I mean. But like, so, but you know, he did a very courageous and honorable thing. That, you know, they're in a jam, and he needs it. He needs to do his part. So. Kudos to it being Kirk. So yeah,
and well, and after this, I know originally I think they wanted George Takei to be there as Sulu, and they couldn't get him. They put in the character of D'Amora, but I like the character of D'Amora just from the little bit that we saw, and I think there's more in some novels I haven't read yet. But there's just something about like seeing that I'm like, oh, I want to know what these people do afterwards, even though it's really just a bridge to like get Kirk and Picard together. But anyway, I just really like that opening part a lot.
Yeah. And it's, you know, a little disjoint because like because I didn't really know the original series when I watched Generations for the first time, and the opening, you know, first part of the movie outside of Worf.
What is this ship? Who are these people?
Yeah. And I'm like, Captain Kirk, what? No, Admiral Kirk, I guess, you know. it was, yeah, a little threw me for a loop. But then, yeah, you're right with D'Amora. She was amazing. And I do really appreciate, you could see the struggle that Kirk was having when he knew that he could take control and, you know, handle the situation, but that wasn't his place. That wasn't his purpose for him being there. And so he, you know, controlled that urge and stepped aside. So that, good for him.
Excellent. So on that note, Amy, your second pick.
Okay. I know some people don't like Generations because of this, but I love Generations because of it, and that is Data's humor. And my favorite part, and it's the corniest of them all, I'm sure you probably know, when they're down and they're trying, they're like, oh, there's, you know, something behind this wall Geordi sees. And Data takes out his little thing, waves his arm, says, open sesame. And then in Brent Spiner's classic Patrick Stewart impersonation, make it so. I mean, it just cracks me okay. up every single time. And I just love his humor throughout it, you know, and him trying to understand humor and in part, you know, his emotions. But the humor part is so funny. And he just starts laughing. And Geordi's like, what are you laughing about? Oh, that joke you told at Encounter at Farpoint, you know. And it's like, that was 7 years ago. And I love it. And I know it's a corny part of the movie, but it is hilarious. I love it.
You know, when the movie came out and I saw it in the theater, I actually went back to see if that first episode, if that joke was there. And I don't think it was. I don't remember.
Yeah, I did the same thing too. Yeah.
I was like, I don't remember that. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
It was in a deleted scene or something. Yeah. Making that up, but no. Yeah. I mean, what do you think about the Data's humor? Do you find it funny in this movie?
I thought it was pretty good. I mean, I mean, it definitely could have been a lot worse. We could have seen a lot more, you know, heavy humor from him. But I think we got quite, a decent amount of humor that didn't overwhelm the film. I mean, I actually kind of like it. I don't really call Generations a movie. It's more like an episode to me. But like,
a theatrically released episode.
Yeah, it feels like an episode.
I thought that was Insurrection.
The movie that shall not be named.
We're going to have to talk about that in a few months.
I don't know. I can't say that name. But like, besides the movie that shall not be named, I thought it was pretty good humor. I actually kind of liked it. So yeah.
And funny, when you think about children and their learning humor and how it just, everything is funny to them, you know, the farting jokes and the burping jokes. And then, you know, and you can
see.
Should
we have had that from Data in this movie? Some farting and burping jokes?
You'd have to be able to do that at least. Yeah. And I would love to see what the writers would make, what excuse they would make for him partying.
Yeah. But I mean, you can see like the development of humor when you look at young children. And I think that's where, you know, Data's humor is at, where he's like understanding these little puns and these, you know, these just jokes in general and the nuance of when people say something and the tone they say it. And, you know, because he certainly tried when he pushed Beverly in the water, you know, oh, being funny is supposed to be spontaneous. So he pushes Beverly in the water and it's like, Data, that was not funny, you know? And so I think you see him develop this humor and it just sort of reminds me of kids and their humor and their development of it, where they start, you know, at the very, you know, basic and then move on.
I can see that. I do have to say that I'm still kind of annoyed by some parts of it where it's like Mr. Tricorder and he's searching for life forms. That's one of the few places in Star Trek where I'm like, I wish I wasn't watching this right now. However, one thing
everyone's gonna sing the song. Everyone join me.
Life forms.
No, I will not join you. I'm sorry.
Life forms.
Okay.
Where
however,
are you? You started it, Justin.
Well, I've referenced it, but anyway. But what I do want to say that I thought was actually really funny is when he's in 10 forward, you know, and he has this thing to drink.
Oh yes.
And Guinan says, it looks like he hates it. And Day says, yes, that's it. I hate this.
It's revolting.
Yeah. Hey, you're getting ahead of me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it says Data, and LaForge says, Data, I think the chip is working. And Data says, yes, I hate this. It is revolting. Guinan says, more? Dave says please. That to me is hilarious because I don't know, for me, like that's a little more sophisticated humor than some of the other stuff that he's doing. Mm-hmm. And it's just unexpected. Like he hates it and he's like, I want more because these emotions are amazing, you know. Mm-hmm. So I will agree with you on that. That one is funny, but the rest of it I don't find.
I do believe this is gonna be the round for humor because I actually chose Life Forms. Or for Big Two. So but like
why don't you sing it again and talk about it more?
No one needs to hear me sing twice in one day. But like, yeah, I'm okay with the humor. I mean, especially in the 10 forward. I mean, him being excited and actually sound like he's practically yelling yelling that it's revolting. It's even better. It's
funny the way he delivers it.
Yeah, his high pitch. It's revolting. I'm like,
yes.
Whoa. Yeah, that's I like it.
Yeah.
So
is that your second one that you want to talk about? Is the Life Forms?
Yeah, it was Life Forms. But we already sang the song.
Yeah.
Maybe we can put that on the what's it called? Since you sang a song, now I'm singing the song.
There you go.
Or previously on Trek FM. There you go.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I do. All right. Well, I guess I should go to my second one, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There you go.
Okay. So for my second one, so this is something that I noticed this time. I really like after the first scene with the Enterprise B, you see them in the holodeck on this old school sailing ship from like, I don't know, 18th century or something like that, and all these uniforms. And one of the things that struck me in this promotion ceremony with Worf, you know, they're having a lot of fun with it. And that I think Picard is having a lot of fun with it. And I think it's something that's made possible by what happens in All Good Things in the last scene where he joins the poker game. Because now he's more a part of those fun things that they're doing. And I just thought about it more. Like, that's a further progression of Picard's character from that little bit that you saw in All Good Things. Now he's participating in this kind of really fun thing with Worf's promotion. I mean, they're having a great time with it. Of course, Data makes the mistake of pushing Crusher in. But besides that, it's like he's having a great time and continues to have a great time, of course, until he gets the news on the holodeck that Robert and Renee have died. But before that, it's like, I don't know if before All Good Things or something like that, he would have participated in something like this, or maybe Riker would have put something like this together and Picard would be somewhere else. But I was just noticing that's kind of like a further progression from what we saw before. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Something like that wouldn't be put together by a crew that, you know, doesn't know each other, doesn't know them well. I mean, you're in a sense going into the holodeck for a promotion that's fun versus an actual like a ceremony like in 10 forward or something like that, or in the cargo bay or something like that, or even on the bridge. I mean, wherever, but like,
yeah, you can imagine like Picard, a little lectern, like, today we are gathered here to promote.
Yeah, exactly.
Worf,
like it's a formal occasion or something like that. Yeah.
Is that, that's a, I don't know if that's a bad Picard or what, but it's my attempt. We're gathered here today. Okay. So, okay. What do you think, Amy?
Yeah. I think you're right. And I think, you know, I think the idea sort of started with Riker, but then maybe melded to more in line with Picard. So I think you can see Picard's hand in, you know, doing this celebration like that, because, you know, when Picard and Riker, and Picard's like, man, this is the time, you know, just the stars to guide you and the wind in your sails. And, you know, so you can see that Picard maybe, you know, had a little bit of influence, you know, and I think Riker,
I think he influenced,
like,
the setting. I think Riker would have had a different setting if it was all up to him.
Exactly. Yeah. And so Riker, you know, with the idea of, okay, we're going to do something special out of the ordinary, not just your in 10 forward, we're going to have a promotion, but we're going to make this, you know, special. And I think you're right. It is exactly, you know, Picard opening up and enjoying his family a little bit more this way is great progression of his character. Because we would have never seen this in, you know, seasons 1, 2, or 3.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, excellent.
Great pick.
So thank you. let's go on, if you think we should, to our third picks. So, Amy, what is your third one. So far, we've had Troy and Data. There's a certain something I'm looking for. I'll see if you come through on this or a later one.
Yes, this is my number one pick. I will defend it till the day I die. Troy did not crash the ship. I get a lot of crap for it.
So your favorite character moment is her not crashing the ship.
That's exactly right. No, yeah. But in part because, you know, when we first meet Troy, she is just ship's counselor, lieutenant commander. And then through the seasons, you know, she decides to go into command and she achieves that goal and accomplishes quite a bit, you know, with the Romulans, you know, and she is taking more command opportunities. And I think when the ship is, you know, going down and crashing and exploding and stuff, you can see she jumps in. Well, she's, you know, Troy, take the helm. That she, A, has the ability, B, has the confidence to do that. And she sticks by her post through the entire time. And she is doing her best with her knowledge and everything and working together with Data to save and not completely demolish and kill everyone on that ship. You know, it is noted that no one died in that crash. And I credit her and Data with that.
I completely agree with you, Amy. It actually annoys me when people say, well, Troy crashed the ship and generate. Well, no.
Yeah.
The ship was was attacked by, you know, these Klingon ships under the Duras sisters, and it was already having the Enterprise D was already having a lot of difficulty. She had to take the Khan, I think, because someone was, you know, injured and had to be carried away. And she was able to.
Yeah. Go ahead. That wasn't he sucked out into
space? It could have been something like that. Yeah. I don't remember. But anyway, so someone wasn't there. She had to take the Khan. And I think she did a good job. Nobody got killed. Sure, the saucer section crashed, but there was so much damage they could do nothing but, you know, separate and try to do what they could. So I think she did a great job. I mean, sure, the thing crashes into the planet, but that would happen with anyone there, right?
Right.
It's not like she was incompetent and like, oops, we're crashing. Yeah. That's what was going to happen because they were in such dire straits already after being attacked by the Klingon birds of prey. So I'm with you 100%. I think she does a great job in something that she's not really trained to be at the helm. But I mean, surely she's had some training, but probably hasn't done it in a while. So, but
yeah,
what do you
think?
Yeah,
the fact that she stayed by her post and, did the best. I mean, that was caught in gravity. What are you going to do? No, gravity.
I'm with you all the way. But Richard is maybe a different opinion. What do you think? It.
Okay. You ready for this one?
Yeah, it's going to be two against one.
Well, maybe if she would have been in, you know, training more often and maybe gone to those helm trainings.
Richard, there's nothing anybody could have done in that situation.
Sure, she could have reversed the polarity of the shield and then the freaking explosion would have catapulted them out of the orbit. I mean,
or she could have said, Q, help us. Wouldn't that have been something in Generations if at that point it was like, Q, we need you now. Here's your price. You know,
now, if you want to ruin the story, I think that would have done it.
Like at the last minute, like Q's here. Wow. Hey, that's a way to get Q in the movies.
Right. Yeah. No,
right? And then Q transports the whole saucer section over to the Nexus and everybody's having these weird fantasies and they have to get the whole saucer section out. Anyway, that's too much.
And the fantasies are with him.
No, but keep going, Richard. I interrupted you. I personally don't think anybody could have done any better than she did.
Well, you know, I guess you gotta be there. I guess I don't know. No, but like, yeah, no, I'm okay with it. Yeah, I say for jokes, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But like, you know, it is fun to bash on Troy.
No, yeah, people say it out of jest and they know, you know, that's a button for me. And I allow people to push that button because I'm like, no, yeah. She didn't. Da, da, da. And they get me all riled up and I'm just like, calm down, Nelson.
Yeah. And while we're at it, the other time people say that she crashed the ship in Nemesis, like Picard specifically told her to ram the scimitar.
She had to follow orders.
You know.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm just messing.
So anyway, yeah, I know the spirit that people are doing it in, but I don't think it's the right characterization.
Yeah.
So good character moment. Troy at the helm.
Yes.
In Generations.
There you go. There you go.
But I mean, it shows her progression, you know, of being in command, being able to take.
You think she wouldn't have done as good a job if something like that happened on like a countered far point?
Exactly.
Yeah.
She wouldn't have had the know-how, I don't think.
Maybe.
I could see that with the command training and what happens. Yeah. All right, Richard. So do us proud with your third choice.
Well, you already took my third choice, which is the...
I did?
Yeah, it was actually the beginning scenes. Not the Enterprise B, but the...
The holodeck.
Yes, the holodeck. The holodeck. Yep. So that was my third choice. So I'm going to go with my honorable mention, and that would be... Finally, we get to see another emotion with Data, and that's, you know, sadness, I guess. Sadness?
Yeah.
With Spot.
it's kind of like happy tears at seeing
happy,
Spot.
Yeah, happy tears. Yeah, here you go.
Oh, yeah. I love that part, too.
I absolutely
love
that,
too. So nice.
Okay, I'm going to change my answer since it's so nice. No, just kidding.
Oh, no.
No, I mean, you know, as much as I say I hate cats, I actually do really like cats to a certain extent. But like, yeah, it's definitely heartwarming to you know, after Troy crashed the ship.
After Troy took the helm and saved everyone's lives on the ship,
including a cat.
Oh no! All right, I'll give her that one. But definitely. I absolutely love that. That, you know, he got to, you know, tears of joy, finding basically
it's such a great pick because Data, you know, goes to enumerate how many emotions and that he's cataloged, and well, that's all the emotions there are, and you know, then he finds Spot, and you know, and he's like, oh dear, my emotion chip is broken, you know, and Troy's right there and says, no, I think it's working perfectly. And, you know, and it just shows Data's naivete. Yeah. About how the emotions are going, there are a set number of emotions and like that's it. And no, there's so many others, you know, combinations and blends, and you know, emotions are this sliding scale, and I think he's learning that, and that is a great precious moment. And I love cats, and so it's very dear to my heart.
I love cats too, and it's a very sweet moment, but I think it's great acting by Brent Spiner, especially because he tells stories about how the cats who were parts of these scenes were real jerks and wouldn't ever want to do what they were supposed to do. So yeah, I think Brent Spiner's head, it's not that he doesn't like cats, it's just that it was really hard to get them to do what they wanted to do. So maybe it was just tears of joy that the scene actually like worked. Take 1,000. Oh, the cat's it's so great, the cat is acting. So
that's funny, but I hadn't heard that before.
Yeah, I'd have to see where he but there was a con some time back where he told a story about how the cats were just really difficult to, like, they were supposed to like go up and eat something and they would just like stay where they are, you know, when he has like the supplements out and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And they were just like refuse to move, stuff like that. I'll see if I can send it to you.
That's funny.
But yeah, that's a great moment, and I made a note of that as maybe something to put in because it's a great moment, but I'm glad you chose that. So my third choice is going to be something that's not a person.
Ooh.
But a new thing that gets introduced here, or should I say something that's enhanced here, and that is stellar cartography.
Mm.
I love how stellar cartography looks in this movie. It's just beautiful and cinematic, and especially when you compare it to last episode, we were talking about Lessons. Stellar cartography is like some lighted sphere that they're looking at. It's not very impressive at all, but here... with the movie budget, I mean, it just looks beautiful, all of the stars and things in the galaxy that you can see. So I love that kind of as a character, this new kind of part that you see of the Enterprise Deep, which gets destroyed or totaled. But I just love seeing it
totaled like an insurance claim.
Well, you know what? I mean, the saucer section crashed and the star drive section blew up, so it's totaled.
You totaled
it's
like the Enterprise D.
Yeah, it's like if on your car, like the back half separated and exploded, and the front half crashed into a brick wall. You know, it's totaled.
And
right?
I'd be suing the manufacturer if that happened.
it's the back half separation on your car. You just push a button in the back. No, that would be really bad, especially if somebody's in there. But anyway, it's total. But yeah, it's great that they did that and put that effort into it, knowing that they weren't going to be able to reuse it in the same way. So I think it's great. And I think you do see some version of stellar cartography on the Enterprise E in Nemesis. I think that's
yes.
right.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not as impressive as what you see in Generations, I think.
So, I'm not trying to deter from your whole thing, but that's probably the only thing that didn't really get updated in the movie, or at least I saw when I was, I'll have to go back and watch it again, but or at least that
the didn't look good on your 65-inch plasma TV.
But it wasn't as spectacular TV. As, you know, seeing it on Blu-ray for the first time. Maybe they should have done it, maybe it was done in a regular standard definition, I don't know.
Oh, you mean when you originally saw it in the theater?
No. Well, yeah. I mean, I remember it being far more, like, there's a more of a wow factor watching in the theater versus when I watched it an hour ago. And
okay,
maybe it's because they didn't update. I don't know. But I mean, don't get me wrong. When I first watched it in the very first time in the theater, it was freaking amazing. I absolutely loved it. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it. I think it looks great, but go ahead, Amy.
Okay, so I'm really glad you brought this up because I wrote in my notes, whose quarters are they in? Because I'm like, okay, this is the Enterprise D. This is the ship that
we've known
for the
past Darren in Lessons.
The past seven seasons, this has been the Enterprise D. And I looked when they were in Data's quarters, and like when Data and Geordi were deciding if they should use the chip or not. And I'm like, whose quarters are these? And then in Guinan's quarters, I'm like, no, the quarters were completely different. I'm like, I've never seen this before on the Enterprise D.
Interior refit.
Yeah.
I mean, and also like, okay, one of the things that I know people like, but I don't like is some of the lighting in the movie because it seems really dark in the quarters. Like they're in Guinan's quarters and it's like lights are really low and it's not like that during the show at all. But
yeah,
that affects how I see it. But I don't know, the quarters got refit or something. And for stellar cartography, they retrofitted some room that they were using before. I don't know.
So 1701 gets a refit and then 1701A. So is this the D's refit?
No, but a refit means that it's the same ship and there are changes that are made to it. So the original series is 1701, the motion picture is a 1701 refit, although it's pretty different. but it's basically, it's the same ship, but things have been changed. Maybe things have been changed
so
out.
So can we say that about the D?
I don't know if anyone's
refit?
Ever called it that.
No, I don't think because,
I know, which makes me a little upset outside, that 1701 gets all
no, but
these
I think the
different names. And here you're mentioning stellar cartography and the quarters that are completely different.
Yeah, but a refit is really, I think, on the outside. If they change things in the interior, it's not a refit of the ship.
Oh,
they've just
okay.
changed
remodel.
The interior design. A remodel.
There
yeah, there you go.
Oh,
this is
okay.
The
all
Generations
right.
has the 1701D remodel.
We might as well just okay. go into construction terms, too. So so now we're in car insurance. So now.
Yes, interior right. design, it gets remodeled. And then insurance, it gets.
And that's
got
to be a fire hazard, especially in Guyan's quarters. You
right?
know, with all those what's candles, they have to be either yes. fake or non-flammable.
I don't know.
Worf likes
candles in his quarters sometimes.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, but not that many.
Tuvok likes
but
candles.
But yeah, yeah, not that many.
I know. Her quarters, I noticed that this time, the quarters, it's like, this is a little weird. And of course, the lighting is different. I know it's supposed to be more cinematic and whatever, but it always throws me off like, someone just turned down the lights, or
well, because they're getting the light from the Amagosa star. So
yeah, but when you're in Guinan's quarters, I don't know. It's a specific choice to make it like cinematic in some way or a certain mood, but it always throws me off because it's the same ship like few months after All Good Things or something.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. The lighting is very different. I, for one, like the lighting and I like the change. It changes the mood. And it, yeah, makes it more a movie for me. But I can see where you're coming from for sure.
Okay. Well, anyway, I started with stellar cartography and we went into interior design and insurance and that's cool. So Amy, do you have honorable mentions?
Well, one of mine was taken, but I have another one going back to Data, but this is more the character between Data and Geordi and like their friendship just really is solidified. When Data goes to apologize for Geordi and, you know, he just says, well, I haven't been behaving like myself. And, you know, then Geordi's like, you've been feeling human. And Data's smile just right there. It's like, that's the highest form of a compliment that could be given to Data. And for Geordi to say it, especially when Data really could have, you know, prevented Geordi from being taken by the Klingons, you know, and that guilt that I'm sure he's feeling because now he has his emotion chips. Like, I just think that really shows and solidifies their friendship even more. It's just, it's a great scene for me.
Yeah, definitely. I think you do see some really great stuff with their friendship. Yeah. And the ups and downs it goes through.
Yeah.
I like it too.
So that was my honorable mention.
Okay. Do you have any honorable mentions that haven't already been taken, Richard?
Like we all said, there's not a lot to choose from, really. But I mean, there's a lot to choose from, but obviously, yeah, you know what I mean.
We've gone over a lot of it.
Yeah, so, but yeah, all of them were taken. So it's, yeah, no big deal.
Okay. So before I get into my honorable mention, I just want to ask a question that came up while I was watching Generations. So there's this thing where Soren wants to get to the Nexus, but it's difficult. You can't really get to it in a ship because it gets torn apart. So he's trying to bring it to this planet, Viridian 3, right? Here's my question. Wasn't there an alternative where he could be in a ship a certain distance and like be transported out in a spacesuit and just fly into the Nexus that way? Could he have done that?
See, now you're making sense of it.
Well, I don't think that he could fly into it. He would just have to, I mean, because you bring up a point, like that's how.
But the planet flies into it, essentially, because the planet is orbiting around the star. So it kind of flies. Yeah. They're both moving and they intersect as they move.
Yeah, I guess right? That's true. I mean, because you could look at like the Enterprise B and how Kirk was taken, the Nexus
yeah, it sucked him out. So why couldn't like Soren be sucked out into space into the Nexus?
Yeah, so why couldn't he just be sitting on a ship some distance away in its path?
Yeah, or just in a spacesuit. And
yeah,
and just...
now you're making sense of things.
I never thought of it before, but I'm like, why does he have to have this thing where he brings it to the planet? Why can't he just come to it in a spacesuit?
Well, I was just thinking, it's like, why don't you just make it into like an altar or something like that? And have like a platform that goes out of the ship and with the spacesuit and everything.
Like a human, plank?
Like a human sacrifice or something like that. And then you'd be like, here you go, buddy.
That's retract the plank.
Oh, right.
Okay. Yeah. So, okay. Anyway, it kind of destroys some of the premise of the movie, but it just came into my head this time. Like, why is he making this come to a planet? This makes no sense. And he's blowing up the star. Like, does he have to go that far? Anyway.
Yeah, he does.
He's thought about it for so long that he can't think straight. Okay.
Right.
And did they use the Genesis Project to help him out collapsing that star too? No, I'm just saying. I don't think so. No, there was nothing you mentioned.
And of course, like another thing that always bothers me is he like fires this missile from the planet and it hits the star like 30 seconds later. Like, no, it's a lot further away than that. But anyway,
hey, it's a supersonic missile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if it's supersonic. It has to be going warp. And I don't think it's going warp. But anyway.
Hey, as you heard warp, it takes 11 to 15 seconds to track the item. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
Sorry. Oh, okay. So let me get to my honorable mention then.
Okay.
All right. So one of the things that I also really like in Generations is these scenes that you get of Kirk and Picard, not on Viridian 3, but in the Nexus, where they're just kind of talking to each other. And the particular scene that I really like is when Kirk is, you know, in this house, he's like making eggs with Picard. And it's, there's just like something that's so kind of pedestrian about it, but there's something I love just seeing them do that and just like talk to each other in a kitchen. Like, it's not like a real sci-fi setting. It's not like some big stakes at that point, but they're just talking to each other, and Kirk wants to, you know, serve him breakfast. So Picard's helping with that. And then I love how Kirk is like really delighted when the toast pops. He's like, "Ooh, this is great." I don't know. There's just something about that.
I love that scene too. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's simple, but like, I could have watched that scene go on for like a lot longer and have them just like talk about their experiences and trading stories and stuff. I don't know. There was something about that that I loved a lot more than the other stuff that's in the Nexus.
Yeah. And that really, you know, shows the power of the Nexus, because, yeah, they're making the eggs. And then, you know, Captain Kirk's is like, "Something's missing. Pop, toast." You know,
I know.
Like,
yeah.
You go, no.
Perfect.
You go,
yeah. It's charming. It's just, I don't know, it's just, there's just something that's just totally charming about that scene, and I love it, like, every time. Like, I would watch the movie that's just, like, 2 hours of Kirk and Picard, like, having breakfast and talking, but maybe that's just me.
You know, I've always wondered why Picard isn't affected as much by the Nexus and its powers, and why his memory...
He realizes it. What is it? He sees like some reflection in like one of those balls on the Christmas tree.
Yeah.
He's. I mean, it's almost like he has some weird superpower about this more than Kirk. Like, he realizes something's not right. That even Guinan had difficulty with.
That must have been a deleted scene. He must have got like the magic Nexus ring or something like that.
It's
because
Q.
I think he it's had Q. foreknowledge. He had foreknowledge of the Nexus's power, so that's it. That's the only thing I can think of, like, because, you know, he was talking to Guinan about it.
Oh, that's right. He was talking to Guinan, yeah.
The others didn't know about the Nexus.
That's a good point. Kirk doesn't know about the Nexus, but Picard does because he talked with Guinan. Okay. Yeah. Hey, that makes sense. We got something to make sense.
We're making sense of it again.
Oh, goodness. All right. So, and that was the only other honorable mention I had. So, excellent. Yeah, I mean, I didn't know what to expect, if it was just going to be like we'd all have the same picks or we'd have a lot of difficulty, but I think we found a lot of fun stuff to talk about. So, and I've definitely found a greater appreciation of Generations, even if it's lower down on my list. There's some stuff that I really loved about it. So maybe let's go into final thoughts and, you know, what you think based on what we talked about. Amy?
Yeah. I think it was a very interesting discussion that we had. Like, we didn't, I mean, I guess I feel a little bad for Beverly and Worf, you know, and a little bit with Geordi. You know, they just didn't have much to do. I mean, Geordi was integral with the Klingons, and that was funny when, you know, the Dorel sisters are like, "This is the only engineer who doesn't go to engineering," you know?
Yeah, that was funny.
Yeah, but, you know, we just don't really see much. So I do have a question. Is Worf on Deep Space Nine, or does he come after the movie?
This.
Oh, after.
This.
Okay. So that's why. Okay.
Oh, yeah. All right. This episode aired... Not episode. This movie, Generations, was in the was in the theaters at the time of the first part of season 3 of Deep Space Nine. So Worf would come on to Deep Space Nine a year
later. Season
4. That's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Right. Yeah. All right. Okay. All right. Then that makes sense. Like I said at the beginning, this movie, I quite enjoyed it more so than I did the past two times I watched it. I think the last two times, you know, I put it in, I'm like, oh, I guess I have to watch Generations, but it's gotten more exciting for some reason. I think, yeah, making the connections and seeing all there is to see. And you're right, the production value is still amazing. I love seeing the part where they're on Viridian 3 and the fight scene between Zoran and Picard and Kirk, because that's just right there in my backyard, right there north of Las Vegas.
Kirk got killed in your backyard?
Yes, exactly.
On the bridge?
under the bridge. Oh. That's probably my least favorite part. But anyway, go ahead.
So, yeah, interesting. I don't know if this is just because it's Earl Grey and that we're focused on Next Generation, but, you know, we didn't really talk too much about
I had two
Kirk.
Moments with
Yeah, that's Kirk. True. That's true. But, you know, it still is a Next Generation movie in my mind, even though there is, Captain Kirk with it. So, and I do think that it is a good handoff of the movies. I think including Captain Kirk in the storyline, I think was pretty smart. So I think it is great. And it sets up the next three movies quite well that we're going to see and talk about later. So yeah, I, like you, it's just Generations has gone up on the list and I would love to see it again. It's very exciting.
What, in the theater?
Wouldn't that be great? But, next time I want to watch a movie, I'm not going to, I don't want to watch Generations. I'm excited to watch it again. But
next time, watch it with the time travel cut that inserts the inner light family into the Nexus.
Oh, right.
Like we talked about before.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Richard, your final thoughts on what we've talked about for Generations today?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I actually didn't think I thought I was going to have the same feelings. Like, all right, there's this, there's that, and pick apart the movie. But like, I actually quite enjoyed this watching it over again today. And like I said, it was amazing. I couldn't believe how great it is. Now, I'm just thinking for the next episode for this little series, it's going to be difficult because I already destroyed the CD a long time ago. So so I don't know how I'm going to watch the movies that shall not be named.
but the next one's First Contact, so you're okay with
it. Oh, that's right. Okay. So, yeah. Okay, the one after that. So I guess I got time. All right. I'll watch First Contact all day. Actually, I don't even think I've seen it on this TV yet. So I'm right.
You got it. I watched it on Blu-ray not long ago. It looks really good.
But is really, it a really 65 plasma? No, I'm just kidding.
No, I don't have a 65 inch plasma, so it'll look even better for you.
Yeah.
But no, it look First Contact looks really good.
Yeah. So I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Like we said in the beginning, it was a little difficult because obviously we have a 2-hour movie versus 20 some odd episodes or whatever. And it's just, it was a lot more difficult, but I had fun doing it and it brought back quite a bit of memory. So I'm in the same boat as you guys. You know, it went up a little bit, not further up, but it went up. And mostly because they did a spectacular job with all that makeup and all the models and everything. I just didn't realize how good of a job they did. So, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So, I mean, it definitely went up in the way that I think about it, although there's still things I have problems with, like the Victorian Christmas family. And honestly, a lot of the stuff on Viridian 3 feels a little weird to me, but there is a lot that I enjoy. And I think one of the reason why two of my picks had to do with original series characters is that, I mean, possibly two of my favorite parts of the movie are the opening with the Enterprise B and then kind of Kirk and Picard together, especially like in the Nexus, just talking with each other and all of that. I mean, there's a lot else in the movie that I like, and I think that's really good. But I think up until the point that Kirk gets killed, I mean, I think they make really good use of the original series characters and all of that. Although I wonder if there might have been another way if they had been able to get more actors involved. I mean, I think originally they had asked Leonard Nimoy about getting involved, and he was like, "No, I'd not interested in this script, but if you rewrite it into something that might have this, this, and this," and they're like, "Sorry, we don't have time." But if they would have been able to get like the whole cast, I wonder if it would have been interesting for like a time travel adventure where you have the Enterprise, I guess it would be the Enterprise A, just kind of going forward in time and meeting up and having this adventure and being sent back as if nothing happened. But anyway, but I came to really enjoy it. And I think there is a lot that I think is illuminated, especially about Picard and Data's character in the movie. And I think there are some things that are illuminated about Kirk's character as well. I found, in watching those parts, it was almost like, we were getting a sliver of another original series movie and you were getting to see more of how he deals with this and his reflections on his life. So I like that part a lot. So yeah, I think there was a lot of great stuff here, and looking forward to continuing the next movies that we talk about. Yeah. All right, so preview of next week's episode, we are going to be picking up our Lost Episodes series again about unproduced episodes of The Next Generation. I think usually we don't say in advance which ones that we're going to talk about, but in this case, I want to let listeners know that one of the Lost episodes that we'll be talking about is something where more information has come to light, a detailed outline of what would have been a Next Generation story called Return to Forever, which would have involved the Guardian of Forever and both a younger and older Spock. I think it's kind of exciting what they might have put together that fell through. So we'll be talking about that and then one other. So hopefully you can join us for that as we continue our Lost episode series.
Ooh, that sounds interesting.
It's very interesting. It was like a 4-page outline that was put out, and I'll talk more about that on the next episode. But that'll be exciting to talk about.
All right.
Well, it's been so much fun talking about our favorite character moments from Generations and the 1701D remodel, but that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Earl Grey.
If Picard is acting with his heart, why would you tell her no? She needs this, da da da, and thinking with his heart over his head. I mean, that's a realistic. I'm sure everyone can relate to, you know, someone who normally is logical, falls in love, especially a workplace romance, and then the dynamic changes so much, especially when it's someone in authority.
Literary Treks.
Kai Wynn, I think, in this novel, they got her voice perfect. When her first line, when Sisko goes to meet her and she says something like, "Oh, emissary, I just love being called to the station in the middle of my many important things that I do on the planet. I especially find the many hours that it takes to fly here gives me a great time to, like, meditate and reflect on my life." Wow, she's so... Oh, that was perfect.
Melodic Treks.
So nobody's commenting on it. They're just watching it happen. And again, it's like Ron Jones gets to soar in his score. He doesn't have to, like, play down to dialogue. It's just like, I'm going to let fly with the orchestra here. And I thought that was a great moment for him in the episode.
Warp 5.
Okay, so T'Pol is confronting the green face guy.
Silic.
What's his name? Silic. I was going to say Tuvok. Why was I thinking of Tuvok?
They both end with a K.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all of these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. That helps others to find the show.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook and it should come right up.
If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Earl Grey. That will come right to us and we might read your email on the show just like we did today. You can also find the network on Twitter at trekfm. And on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. So, Richard, where can people contact you when you're not saving the Enterprise B?
You cannot find me in the deflector disc control room. That's for sure. But if the
you're not going to take the risk Kirk did.
Well, but if the Nexus is as bliss as everyone says it is, then you bet your butt I'm going to be there. So. But okay. Anyway, yeah. So you guys can find me on Facebook. I pop in here and there on the Babel Conference. And I am also on Twitter. My handle is XRansom. So Justin, where can people contact you when you're not spending time in the Nexus? But who wouldn't?
Well, you know, much like Guinan, I am spending time in the Nexus right now. There's just an echo of me that's there that I put there in the future, but then they came back from the past. I don't know. Yeah. Some time travel thing. But a piece of me is in the Nexus, and I'm very jealous of it. But when I'm not doing that, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek. Currently tweeting out my season 6 rewatch of The Next Generation and talking about lots of other Star Trek stuff. And you can find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook. So, Amy, where can people contact you when you're not letting everyone know the truth that Troy didn't crash the Enterprise D?
I love how you wrote that even before we recorded.
Because I knew it was going to come up.
Yes, you just know me so well. Well, I will always be doing that. But also, because I'm a multitasker, you can find me on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson. And I've sort of stopped Deep Space Nine, but I will get back to it. So I'm tweeting about my rewatch still in season 4, almost at the end of season 4. You can find me here on the network. I co-host The Edge with Patrick Devlin, and that's about Star Trek Discovery. And my favorite place is on the Babel Conference.
But you're doing postcards again, yes?
Yes. So we will be doing our postcards for the short treks that are coming out, which will have been out by the time you hear
this. Yeah, there's
this
one episode by the time listeners hear this that will already be out.
Yes. So exciting. Expect postcards around the same time as this one.
Excellent.
All right. If you'd like to help us keep all our many shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you can find the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producers, Norman Lau, Justin Ozer, Michael Huter, and Thomas Lapel. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and Earl Grey.
So join us next time for another cup of Earl Grey.
Data, that was not funny.
Today is a good day to get sucked to the Nexus!
Don't tell me. Tuesday?